Session number 12099, Harry Marsh, Reel 3.
Lutter was quite near, and we used to have coach work. I used to go out and liaise and go to Birmingham sometimes to meet people that could do work for us, outside work, such as beyond our capacity. In other words, you could say that, like building up lorries and woodwork and things like that. And I used to be responsible for sort of checking these people up and sort of arranging what I could do about it, you know, and help, generally speaking, because, you know, we were having all sorts of people without any experience whatsoever. But it was a matter of psychology, and in some of them, there was one fellow I'll never forget. He was a real troublemaker. He was an insurance agent, and he'd been passed, he'd had a course on aeroplane engines. And he'd been posted to our doings too, you know, and he didn't like it. Well, I was short of accommodation, so I asked the wing commander if I could have some help and have a couple of these big bowfighter cases that used to come over in Melville, in great wooden things with a bowfighter. Could I have a couple of those and knock them into shape and build it on top of our existing garage, or, you know, place where we worked, the office and all the rest of it, which he did. So I took a chance. I asked this fella, would he be interested? I give him the tools and put it where so as the dispatch riders could stop and all the rest of it, and build these two whacking great wooden sheds onto one thing against the back. And did you know, I'd have to go and shake him and make him pack up the job. He had a job that he wanted to do, what he liked he was doing. You know? I mean, the fact that they've been fatted like asking the butcher to sort of go, you know, to do some other job sort of business, and they often do, and you've got a square peg and a round hole sort of in it, or vice versa. And he was really awesome. He was getting paid for his job, mind you. There was a lot of them like that. Was getting their wages from the firm, and he couldn't care less. As I say, you had to use a lot of psychology in dealing with those sort of people. And he was exactly the same boy. And he made a marvellous job of fixing up these two boxes. Well, you could call them boxes. As I say, they're a bit bigger than ordinary boxes. Because, as I say, they used to send over these bowfighters from Canada. And they're almost as big as this house, more or less. So,
did you stay at Bruntingthorpe till the end of the war?
Well, yes. I think I tell you, eventually I got posted to Matson Wing Commander's Regret, because I was, you know, sort of a key man, sort of in his idea, to Brussels, or just outside Brussels, where I joined Works and Brixus. Now, I was put in charge of the dumpers there, but the other fella took the diesels. Well, the Works and Bricks, they used to go and repair airfields and the rest of it. But incidentally, I'm mixed up, really. When I first joined the Air Force in the Second World War, I was very, very lucky. I spent 3 weeks at Ford's Works at Dagenham. The first week at Barking College, theory. The second week at their work and the use of their particular tool. And the third week I spent in the factory looking at all this, the way they work this, their work sort of initiative, you know, which is soul destroying. It reminded me of Charlie Chaplin, and all that was going around in a while. If you wanted a valve, he picked it off. And if you wanted another one, you had to wait until it come round and fell. Terrible, boring. And as I say, I suppose it all counted in my career. I also went to a forklift to Derby. And I went for a diesel course. That was most interesting, a diesel course at Blackpool. which of course all helped me in my job. Yes. You know, I knew what I was doing, sort of, and I knew how to take a gearbox down or something like that, you know.
So do you remember when it was in 1945 that you got to Brussels?
I got to Brussels, yes, and I say, we used to send bring the dumpers in because we had sites all over the place, Mons and all over Belgium, where the airfields had been damaged. These dumpers and people like that, things like that, you know, they used to fill in the holes and all the rest, and the rollers and things like that. And we were the sort of headquarters. And then I stopped there for about 3 or 4 months, I suppose, and I got posted to Hamburg. The war has ended there, more or less.
Where were you on VE Day?
Well, I was just outside Brussels. We went in by car, and again, the war's over, and I've seen it all. All these refugees coming with all pyjama coats on, all those people coming from all over the world, you know, been Germany and all that, Polish and all sorts of others. And everybody's going crackers, you know, a lot of tearful scenes. And then the Canadians came in and they started firing revolvers all over the place. I talked to them about time I went home, which I went home. But incidentally, the first morning the war was declared, I went straight up to the Methodist Church at the Pont Louise. And there, I had been going there on a Sunday, which was another experience, because the hymns used to be arranged so that the French and our hymns, the sort of two went together in the tune, and they sort of amalgamated, which was fantastic. I didn't know anything about French then, and it was quite an experience. You know, being a Methodist, I sort of enjoyed it very much. As I say, then, when things settled down after the war, everybody was game was being dispersed, and as I found myself at this, another Works and Bricks, up at Hamburg, which
was absolutely battered
all over the place. Holes in the road, people living, and I went out to Lübeck, which is about 10 or 15 miles away from Hamburg, on a post run, something to do, and the bulldozers had bulldozed each side of the road. Houses, how many people were underneath that rubble, I do not know. And the funny thing, the bridge was quite intact. That was the only connection between them and Denmark. So whether it was pinpointed or not, I don't know. A German told me that when the bombs came, they used to dash down to the river there. I forget the name of the river, the Rhine, I think it was. And used to dive in the river. Because when they dropped bombs, you know, sort of thought of themselves safe.
Were you billeted actually in Hamburg? Or?
No, I was been in, I can't think of the name of the place actually now. I can't think actually. It's not on there, is it? No. I don't think of maybe. It's only a few miles out. Brussels. Well, I put down Brussels because it was the nearest place I could think about. You know?
How long did you remain in?
Oh, Forest Midi, I think it was. Forest Midi. So,
do you remember how long you stayed in Hamburg?
Well, not long. No, they put me in charge of the social side, of, you know, of organising the social side.
What was that like?
Well, it was all right. It was just a farce. I mean, some of these fellas were getting cigarettes and flogging them on the corner market. You know, the sort of thing. One, for instance, come crying out loud. Somebody had knocked him off, knocked his cigarettes off, sort of business. So routine says you've got to take an officer around with you, and you've got to sort everybody's a kit bag. Now that is impossible, you know. So you know, we just have to make a show, sort of business. I mean,
what kind of social things were you organising?
Well, no, you know, everything's in the turmoil. We used to go into Brussels with pictures, bound to Hamburg with the pictures and things. And we used to go, and the sergeants and the NCOs had a sort of a canteen in Hamburg Town Hall. Fantastic place. That was all right. That was not hurt at all. And the joy of that was, they used, not me, but they used to make this German band play. They'd always be in England. That finished it off, you know, sort of. They'd always be in England. Dear, oh dear. Yes, pictures were going, and the entertainment's being arranged. There was a circus there, and I can see those poor German kids, they're all outside, not allowed to get in, and we're larking about, and oh dear, oh dear. And the other thing was, funny thing, we had a park there, and these German girls were all for freestyle, you know, they undressed as much as ever they could. And the fret band was on. You know, no connection of the two. We couldn't even talk to them. And it was. And they're all sitting around there. And all our fellas are looking at them, sort of. And I was told afterwards, when they lifted the flat band, everybody disappeared. Woof! Like that, sort of. And it's, you know. Oh, dear, oh, dear. But I'd love to have gone back there. I never got back there. Germany.
How did you come back home from Hamburg?
Well, that was an interesting fellow. There was only one fellow called, well, he lived in Dorking, I think. I've never lost touch with him, actually. And there was only two of us. Remember, we were the first in, there was first out. So we're only two. I mean, I was 47. What time was it finished? 45. The war. 45, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, I'm 45. I'm getting on a bit. And him and we did the whole journey in a jeep from Hamburg to Ostend. We stopped the night in the Ostend there, and then we went on to somewhere near Southend, I think it was, where I got paid off.
How long did that journey take?
Oh, I don't know. What do you mean, the journey?
From Hamburg to Ostend.
Oh, not long. Best part of a day. You know, we stopped at one or two places. A place that's well known in the Peninsula was Minden. That was very interesting because it was like Elizabethan times. All the houses, you know, the stuck out of the wall, sort of. It's like Elizabethan. It's fantastic, Minden. It always impressed me. Anyway, we, as I say, we stopped at Ostend in the hotel there, and made our way to somewhere. In Essex, I think it was, when I gave me overcoat up and all the rest of it. And then I finished up in Wembley, that's right, where I got fitted out in a grey pinstripe suit and all the rest of it. And I think I drew £84 as my reward, £84.
How long had that been owed? How long did that?
Well, it's 1945. I got married in 1945 in the following August, I got married because I'd met Dorothy during the my time. She was a WS person at Shawbury, Bruntingthorpe. At Bruntingthorpe, and I got married. So we went for a honeymoon to somewhere down the west coast. Tell us what I was doing. It's near Bristol, just past Bristol,
yes.
Western Supermare, and there they celebrated the end of the Japanese War, which ended after the German succession or secession, and they lit bonfires on the seashore and all the rest of the doings there. I was well out of it.
You know. Anything else you want to add about either, you know, your memories of either war?
Not really. I think I've covered what stuff I remember, some humorous and some very interesting, you know.
Right.
I've been all over since, all over the battlefields, you know.
Yes.
Since I've got some friends in Ostend, and it makes you wonder, you know.
Right.
And yet, I went to the Menin Gate. My uncle, he only lasted He was a regular soldier, sergeant out in India. He came home. I remember him coming home in about 1915. And he was killed at Hill 60. We thought with a sniper. But for curiosity, when I was at the Menin Gate, I looked down and found his name on there of the... I realised then he had an unknown soldier, no known grave, so that cleared that matter up.
Yes,
it's an eye opener when you go over these grounds, and especially, over these cemeteries. It's fantastic.
Right.
Life was very, very cheap. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Okay.